I'm Amy, alcoholic. Yes, thanks, Abe, for that introduction. I think you gave me a little bit more credit than I deserved, probably. But love that you came to the 930 Plus group. Love that I came to the 930 Plus group. And what a silver lining in the COVID pandemic has been these online Zoom meetings. And I'm so grateful to be here tonight. And I'm so glad to see so many people here at this meeting. It's amazing. And I have to admit, I am a little nervous because I have not done this before. So I'm probably going to do the best I can and lean in on the program like I do in life. I'm going to read from the literature and hopefully share a simple story that carries the simple message of this simple program. Because it has worked for me up to this point, one day at a time. And I mark a lot of progress in my life. I'm almost, by the grace of God, but by my willingness, as Chris reminded me at the beginning of this meeting, I will be 17 months sober in about a week and a half. So that's where I'm at. I've worked all 12 steps with my sponsor. And we're starting to go back through the big book and work the steps again. So it's fun to come back around and start it again with this whole new perspective. So, but I want to start tonight. I want to read something that when I was going through the steps really was one of the many turning points for me. And it's in step four in the 12 and 12. On page 53. And it says, it is from our twisted relations with family, friends, and society at large that many of us have suffered the most. We have been especially stupid and stubborn about them. The primary fact that we fail to recognize is our total inability to form a true partnership with another human being. Our egomania digs two disastrous pitfalls. Either we insist upon dominating the people we know, or we depend upon them far too much. If we lean too heavily on people, they will sooner or later fail us, for they are human too, and cannot possibly meet our incessant demands. In this way, our insecurity grows and festers. When we habitually try to manipulate others to our own willful desires, they revolt and resist us heavily. Then we develop hurt feelings, a sense of persecution, and a desire to retaliate. As we redouble our efforts at control and continue to fail, our suffering becomes acute and constant. We have not once sought to be one in a family, to be a friend among friends, to be a worker among workers, to be a useful member of society. Always we tried to struggle to the top of the heap or to hide underneath it. This self-centered behavior blocked a partnership relation with any one of those about us. Of true brotherhood, we had small comprehension. That is the life that I lived. And that is why I'm in this meeting right now to share the message to be a worker among workers, a member in a family, in a friendship. This AA is my family now. And, but this paragraph, when I read that for the first time, I was like, holy shit, that's what I've been doing my whole entire life. So anyways, just to give you some of my background to share the experience of strength and hope, my experience, strength and hope of the program and just how it's worked for me. My background, like, you know, they often you hear like, what happened? What happened, what it was like and what it's like now. Okay. What happened was I was raised in a middle-class, white, privileged childhood. I was, you know, it was on the outside, it looked great. And my parents were together until I was 14 years old. And I had a sister who was 5 years older than me. She was like, you know, the good girl. And I came up in the ranks as like the black sheep, the like, I'm going to be the bad girl and almost fail high school and all of that. But on the outside, it looked like, you know, pretty good life. And it was really, I did live a privileged life, and I have lived a privileged life, and just never really, you know, appreciated it for what it was. But also on the inside, in addition to that, was a lot of physical, verbal, and emotional abuse that my family, because we didn't know any better at the time, normalized. And I received a lot of messages, you know, that I attached to as a kid to make meaning of, the only way I could make meaning of it, which was that, you know, to be loved, I had to perform at a certain level. I had to be perfect. That the way the abuse was coming in, the message that I attached to was that nothing was safe, that things were not okay, that nobody could be trusted, that, you know, again, this level of perfectionism that I somehow developed really early on. And what that meant to me and how I moved through my life from then on was that it wasn't okay to be human. It wasn't okay to have feelings. It wasn't okay to even be sick. I mean, I can remember as a kid being sick and, you know, being told, like, unless you go run this fun run, even though you're telling me you're sick, you're not going to celebrate Easter. You know, I mean, as like an 8-year-old. And that was like, okay, I'll go do the fun run, and then I'll puke on the car ride the whole way home and say, I told you so, but nobody listened to me. So I wasn't heard. I wasn't seen. You know, I was getting all these messages as a kid. So anyway, so, you know, fast forward to age 14, when I took my first drink of alcohol, I remember like drinking those Bartles and James or whatever the hell it was. I don't even know what it was, but it doesn't matter. What I do remember is that the feeling that I got when I took that first drink, like all of that, like that everything was okay, that everything was safe, that now I could be me. I could just show up and have fun and be who I wanted to be, and nobody would be there judging me or criticizing me or holding me to some unrealistic expectation, you know? And so, you know, here's then where it goes into what happened. Like 14, I started drinking. By the age of 19, I was I would say I was like on my way to being an alcoholic. We would go, I lived in this neighborhood where I had known one of my girlfriends and these three guys since I was 5 years old. And at 19, we'd go down to the sack. We called it the sack. It was this cul-de-sac where some of them lived. And there was this old car, and we would drink cans of beers, and we would put the empty cans of beers in the car to fill up the car until the car was full of empty beer cans. And I mean, it wasn't like Budweiser either. It was like, you know, I'm from Portland. We drink like micro brews, you know, in the can or in the bottle, whatever it was. So this is like heavy beer. So by 19, this is the level of drinking I was doing. I was a full-on pothead. I mean, super stoner. I went to college in Ashland the first time I went to school. And the reason why I went there is because it was one of the only colleges in the United States that had a bar on campus. It's called Omar's. I'm like, this is my school. These are my people. This is where I'm going. So it just went on like that. You know, it was like a lot of pot smoking, a lot of drinking. And, you know, when you're in your 20s, maybe into your early 30s, that's a lot of fun. And everybody else around me was doing that too, because I surrounded myself with other alcoholics and other people who like to party and drink. And so, yeah. And then at, you know, in my early 30s, I met my ex-husband, we got married. You know, he and I used to like to drink together a lot, and somewhere in our marriage, he stopped drinking and I kept drinking the same way. I had my son when I was 35, and, you know, pretty soon that way of drinking and doing drugs just wasn't looking very hot on me anymore. And unfortunately my husband at the time never, he told me later, you know, that he just didn't have the balls to tell me that I had a problem and I needed to get help. So he just, detached from the marriage and, watched me kind of start down a real dark, dark, deep spiral. But, so, you know, 5 years after that, after I had my son, my husband was pretty much done with my drinking. He had stopped drinking. He told me he hated going anywhere with me because as soon as he saw me take my first drink, he just never knew where the night was going to end up, or he, you know, could tell after two drinks where the night was going to end up, and it wasn't going to be very pretty. Usually in some type of huge argument that I would pick a fight with, because that's what I knew how to do, because that's how I was raised, was with a lot of, you know, like I said, normalizing abuse. And from the moment the summer where we decided to get a divorce, I was 40 years old. I had just lost one of my very best friends that I grew up with. Her daughter was 20 years old and died of a heroin overdose. And just things around me were starting to fall apart. And my life was, I had started my own business at that point, but I was starting to neglect it. I was drinking so much. I would start drinking, you know, all day, every day. It used to be that I'd wait till 2 or 3. Then it started, you know, 11 a.m. I would start drinking. And I still had a bunch of other people that liked to drink around me. So, you know, I normalized abuse and I normalized abuse of alcohol. I would keep, you know, certain friends around me to say like, well, I'm not as bad as that person, or, well, look at them. They drink more than I am drinking and they're doing okay. So I must be okay. Just never really having my own moral compass or barometer for where I was at. And I was in so much denial that I didn't even know I was in denial. You know, that's the thing about it. So, I think from that moment on, which was 5 years ago, I had this, like, what I like to think of as like an off ramp to my bottom. And it was like that summer started it with like divorce. I was having an emotional affair, with a man that was like 15 years younger than me, totally inappropriate. And, just, you know, these little things. And I was starting to come down the off ramp and, you know, it just wasn't enough. Losing my marriage, almost, you know, losing time with my son. I would drop my son off to his dad's when his dad moved out, and I would drive straight to the bar, because I couldn't deal with those feelings, you know, just that pain. And like, I didn't know how to deal with feelings. That's why at 14, I started drinking, because feelings weren't okay. But when I drank, I didn't have to feel at all. So, so yeah. when I was about 2 years, so my divorce was finalized 3 years ago. And at that point, I remember the attorney telling me, like, you need a plan. Like, what are you doing? You know, and my life was so unmanageable at that time. And I still was just not willing to let go of the drink. I mean, I was in so much denial, I didn't even know. But around that time, one of my best friends was actually going into treatment and getting sober and going into recovery. And I remember I went to an AA meeting with her at the 930 Plus group at the Little Blue Room in Portland, Oregon. And I remember sitting in that meeting and she was like, you know, several months into her recovery, I think by then. And I just remember thinking like, God, she's so calm. And I was a hot mess. I was like crying the whole meeting. And I was like, in my head thinking like, there's no way I can do this. I can't come to this meeting. Like, I didn't want to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Then I would have to admit I was an alcoholic. Who wants to admit that, you know? So it took me another year and a half of bouncing along the bottom, you know, what was my bottom. And it just kept getting darker and darker. And I still feel like I had a relatively high bottom. I never had a DUI, which is surprising because I drove drunk all the time. I never went to jail, also surprising because I did some pretty wrong things. But what basically got me to, you know, as I'm bouncing along the bottom, and I was taking a really high dose of antidepressants and drinking so much on top of that, I was like a crazy person. I was raging all over everybody. Shit was coming out sideways. My attorney had asked me, what's your plan going to be? My brilliant plan was go back to college. I go and I start my master's degree in teaching. And all I did was look forward to the end of the day when I could go drink with all of the students that were 24 years old, you know, in my program. I was the oldest person in my program by like 20 years or something, but it was perfect because I could go drink with all these people after class, you know, and somehow again, normalize my drinking and feel like there was nothing wrong, you know, even though deep down, I think I was starting to get to that point, but I was taking the antidepressants. And I mean, one of the indicators was I was raging all over everybody a lot of the time, just in so much self-pity and self-centeredness. And, I realized, oh, I'm not supposed to be drinking while taking these antidepressants. So what did I do? I stopped taking the antidepressants because there's no way I'm going to give up the drink. What the hell? You know, I can get rid of the meds and just self-medicate, you know? So yeah, which was a disaster in itself. And that was really when I started to hit my rock bottom. I was coming off these meds. I was suicidal. Bad, suicidal, just drinking. I'm surprised I didn't drink myself to death. There were a couple nights where my partner that I met 3 years ago, you know, called the ambulance. It was bad. It was ugly. And there was a jolt. And the jolt was as I was bouncing along the bottom that, you know, I was picking fights, and I picked a fight with my partner. We both were really drunk, and it turned into a physical altercation, and I ended up on the floor with a concussion, and my face hit the floor so hard that I got a concussion, and I woke up. My face was split open. I had a big fat fucking lip, and – I was in a master's program. I was student teaching. And 3 days later, I had to go back to the school. And lied to a bunch of third graders about what had happened. And that might not seem like a very low rock bottom, but felt pretty fucking low to me. And a week after that, I had a counselor take the kid gloves off and tell me, Amy, you're a codependent and you need to go to Al-Anon. You need to quit drinking for 30 days. This is what I thought taking the kid gloves off of was, telling me to stop drinking for 30 days and go to a CODA or an Al-Anon meeting, because my partner was heavily drinking and abusing alcohol as well. And to be by yourself for a year. Don't be in relationship for a year. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, I'm not doing any of that stuff, you know? But a week later, I thought, okay, I'll give this a try. And I went to my first CODA meeting, which is Codependence Anonymous, for those of you that don't know what it is. And I remember they had these, all the paperwork out, right? Like the literature. And I sat down and I read through this thing and I was like, oh no, I am fucked. Like, I am my mother and I've turned into my mother and I am so screwed right now. Like, I could check off every single box. Like, yep, I do that. Yep, I do that. So first I was a codependent and then I went to Al-Anon, and still not wanting to admit my own alcoholism, you know, still resisting that honesty with myself. And I went 3 weeks without drinking, white knuckling it, was still smoking pot big time, as like, you know, what do they call that? Like, I don't know, like trying to manage, you know, maintenance medicine or whatever, like trying to manage not having alcohol. It was a hot mess. I remember being in yoga and being like, after yoga, just the last one left in the studio. And I was on my mat and I was just in like child's pose, having a major meltdown, thinking, oh shit, I think I'm an alcoholic, you know, and having that realization. And this woman, this other gal that was a mom at my son's school, and I've known her over the years kind of casually, she just happened to be there and she came over to me. I hadn't said a word. She didn't know anything about me. But here's the first AA along the way. She said to me, just so you know, I'm in recovery, 8 years sober. And I was like, whoa, how did you know that? You know, that was my first, like, I say, like, in my experience, there have been AA members of Alcoholics Anonymous along the way. And from that moment on, I say, okay, now here's my slow on ramp, right? I had this off ramp, and now I have the slow on ramp to AA. And that was just the start of it. But I went 45 days without drinking on my own, white knuckling it. It sucked so bad. So then I thought, well, I think I've got this now. Now I can consciously drink. You know, I can control my drinking. So the very first drink I had was a glass of wine. I'm like, I'm just going to have one glass of wine. And I was by myself at this restaurant where I knew nobody knew me. And there was a man sitting by himself at the table over there. And I noticed that he was like watching me get this glass of wine. And, you know, I was kind of just sitting with it. Like, what am I going to do? How am I going to feel after I drink this? Turns out, no surprise, that member or that man was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned that 2 days later when I ran into him again. And he told me, yeah, I was judging you when you had that glass of wine. So it was just interesting that, you know, there's another member of AA sitting there waiting, you know, carrying the message before I even knew. But, you know, it worked for about 3 weeks, the controlled drinking, just like it says in the big book, you know, and actually, how am I doing on time? I want to read this. Most of us have been unwilling. This is from More About Alcoholism in the big book. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, we will control and enjoy his drinking is a great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. Yeah, that worked for me for a few weeks of trying to control my drinking. It started with that one glass of wine. Then it was a girlfriend's birthday, so I'm going to have another glass of wine, which actually ended up being two. And then, you know, it goes down from there. Ends in 3 weeks later, a total bender where, you know, I'm blacked out drunk again. And finally coming to realization that, yeah, there's no way I can do this on my own. And I asked that woman that had been in that yoga studio, will you go to an AA meeting with me? And she did. And she went with me for a lot. Like, she went with me a lot in the beginning. And I mean, she wasn't my sponsor. She was just another member of AA. And I remember going to meetings, like even up until 90 days. Like, I remember at 90 days going into a meeting and getting a coin for 90 days. And I was like pissed. Like, why the fuck are you giving me a coin? Sorry about my language. I don't know if you guys were in this meeting, but anyway, I don't, why are you giving me a coin? Like, I'm still an alcoholic, you know? Like, what's 90 days, you know? And it's like, now I think about that and I'm like, God, I wish I would have celebrated more, you know? 90 days is a big freaking deal, you know? So now today I celebrate like every other day I celebrate my recovery, you know? But in that meeting, that same meeting, this woman talked about that the program was a spiritual cure. And also at this meeting, it was a new meeting for me. I had been going to this one women's meeting. For some reason that day I went and they were, it wasn't going on. And so I was like, what am I going to do? Okay, just go into this other one. I got to hear that AA was a spiritual cure. And when I sat down in the chair, right in front of me was the promises. And I read the promises, which I'm going to read right now. And it says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. Oh God, I wanted that so bad. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for others. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly and sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And I know I'm running shorter on time now, so I'll just say sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Like my on-ramp to AA has been slow. And now, today at almost 17 months, I can say I do know a serenity and a peace that I've never known before. I do know how to handle situations intuitively, not always perfectly, right? Like I'm still learning, but that's what this program has given me, and doing the work, like working the steps. On my fourth step, I was stuck for a while. And when I did my fourth step, I finally was able to see just all the ways, like the judgments, like judging others and thinking others were judging me, and this perfectionism, and how it was just a mask for my fear of failure. I mean, I would have never been able to understand on such a deep level if I wouldn't have worked the steps with a sponsor who cared and gave me the space and allowed it to be sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, you know? And that's how it is for me today. I mean, I believe that this program, like, is the spiritual cure. That first step has to do with putting the drink down. And the rest of them are the steps to spiritual awakening. And it's by working the steps that I have been able to have a spiritual awakening. I remember getting to 6 and 7 and reading those with my sponsor and having no idea. Like, if you haven't gotten to 6 and 7, just like hold on to your hats and glasses, because that, when I got to 6 and read that with my sponsor, I was like, oh my God. And she's like, welcome to AA. So, I just think that I had no idea. I really thought that AA was, you know, meant to just help me stop drinking. And actually it's, I had no, you know, I just didn't know to the degree and the level at which it's a design for living. Like my life today, there are so many ways I can mark progress in how I show up in my day, every day, how I'm so much more present for my life and for my son. And that I have this whole community of people, and this whole COVID thing and Zoom meetings has just made that grow and get wider and deeper and richer. It's so awesome. And I have this whole community of people that have my back and that do love me unconditionally, right? That thing, that condition that I've lived with and put upon myself from these messages I got early on that aren't even true. And this community of people that has taught me that it is okay to have feelings, that it is okay to show up vulnerably. And by doing that, that's what helps me stay sober, right? Like I put down the drink a long time ago, but my emotional sobriety comes through doing the work, working the steps, being of service. And, also, the most important thing is having had that spiritual awakening and having a conscious contact with my higher power, which is also growing and deepening and becoming richer. I didn't have trouble coming to believe in a power greater than myself when I had people from AA all along the way without even me knowing it. To be able to sit back and look and say like, wow, this program was there for me. Like my higher power is crazy about me, you guys. It's awesome. Like I'm so lucky. Because I've been a real asshole to my higher power, and wow, to be loved unconditionally to that extent is amazing. And there's no way now today that I want to throw that away. I want to move in with intention and using action to show gratitude for my sobriety. That's why now I have 2 sponsees myself, and I can come to this meeting and hopefully give back what I've been given so freely in this program It's just awesome. And I think, I don't know, I think I'm at my time, Chris. Can I wrap it up? Because I think I'm done hearing myself talk. Anyways, I'm so grateful for all of you and this program. Thank you so much.
Great story, Amy.
Thank you, Amy. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, Amy.
Yeah, hey.